All right, Wendy. Wendy, where'd you grow up? Where are you from originally?
I was born in Beckley, West Virginia, and moved all over the place from then. So the East Coast, up and down.
Tell me about your family growing up.
I was born to a mom and a dad who planned me, and they, I guess, suffered from a lot of mental illness and addiction, and didn't work out. And when I was about 5, they divorced. That's actually my earliest memory that night. I laughed during inappropriate times, so we're working on that too. Hopefully you edit this a little bit.
No, that's all right.
Okay.
A lot of people laugh at pain.
The earliest memory I have is the night that they were fighting. My mom says that she was paying attention to me and he got mad and they were verbally fighting. Then they turned into fist fighting. And I remember being 5 years old running into the bedroom and my dad had my mom pinned up against the bathroom wall, throwing fist and, my little 5-year-old self running up on my dad who's in leopard underwear. And then us running off in the middle of the night to a domestic violence shelter, a women's domestic violence shelter. This had been planned, I guess, by my mom to leave at some point. And I remember the people there, they gave me clothes and gave me a bath. And the next day, he kind of faded in and out after that. He was the kind of person. They obviously got a divorce. They did not get back together. I don't remember the toxic back and forth, nothing like that. But he was the kind of person who was only in my life if a woman made him. So if he like had a he remarried and I had a stepmom and she was good about making him, but eventually they split up too. My mom, I stayed with her and I had an older brother. My brother is, I think he was like 5 when I was born. So they were married like 10 years and my brother went with my dad. So I stayed with my mom, and she kind of bounced around. She was the party person, and I was the 5-year-old tag along. Lots of exposure to things that I should not have been around: partying, drinking, sex. Nothing directly like involving me, just me being in the environment at that age. And then she got remarried to a man who became my stepdad, who had 5 kids of his own, and I was the youngest, or one of the youngest. The youngest was a boy a couple months younger than me, so more exposure there. Of they were just bad. And he worked for CSX Railroad. So he has, he married my mom who had me, and he has all these kids, and he did take care of us financially, but that resulted in us moving a lot. I think I counted it one time when I was 16, and I had lived in like over 30 something houses in like 4 different states. So the minute I would settle somewhere, they'd rip me away, and I'd have to constantly readjust and make new friends. And then we landed in West Palm Beach, Florida, when I was about 11, and I was there from 11 to 15. And I will say that when I was 15, I did have a very bad car accident. So I do have like memory loss, But with therapy and going through all this, unfortunately, memories come back and you remember things that you don't really. So I did have a year of no crazy activity of my life, I guess, as a child, because I was recovering. I had to have plastic surgery on my face. They reconstructed it, trauma hawked to the Delray Medical Center. But that was in West Palm Beach. After that, we moved out of West Palm Beach to West Virginia again. So it's just back and forth.
And while you were in West Palm Beach, you were in high school?
Middle school and the beginning of high school. So freshman year and middle school. I guess what you could say, middle class trailer park. Like everyone thought that we had our trailer customized. We picked out, you know, the wallpaper and it was brand new, but people didn't realize that we had deadbolts on every single door because people were violent and stealing and intoxicated and just not a healthy environment.
Were drugs something you were getting involved in?
Oh, yeah. Drugs. I remember things and I try to bring more detail into it. So I remember when I was 11 and trailer park kid, we used to, ride bikes around a whole different time, ride bikes, go to each other's house, spend the night, just a whole different environment than what I see kids doing today. We didn't have the internet and all that. We did at one point the AOL chat room, which I did, discover as a teenager. I what was the question?
You got involved in drugs.
Yes, when I was 11. Okay, so before the drug use started. When my mom married my stepdad and my step-siblings, they were one girl and the rest were boys. They, taught me how to look for the prescription meds in the house because my stepdad was unstable and we would look for them and steal them. And, he would count them and we'd get in trouble and then they'd be locked in safes and it was insane. So, I was stealing random pills as a kid. And then when, I was out with friends and we were just, riding bikes in the neighborhood. I remember there was older boys who were kind of hanging out outdoor, like in an outdoor porch. And they called me and my friend over there. And I used to lie all the time because I moved so many times that I just wanted to make friends. So it would be like, have you had sex before? Yes. Have you done drugs before? Yes. Have you smoked before? Yes. Have you drank before? Yes. And I've not, even if I hadn't, I would say that I had just to kind of try to fit in. So we went into this porch and they had like lines of Coke and I'm 11, lines of Coke. I've never drank. I've never smoked. I've never done anything besides pop up what could have been like a Valium, maybe a half of one, or it could have been just random medication, that we were stealing in the house. But that we went in there and they were like, do you want some? Have you done this before? And I was like, yeah, I've done this. And I was 11 years old and I did a line of Coke. And I remember looking at my friend who happened to also be, I guess, involved in the Epstein circle.
Now much of your personal information, your address, phone number, past addresses, even family details, can be found online in seconds. And most of it wasn't posted by you. It's collected and published by data brokers and people search sites you've never signed up for. Anyone can access it. Strangers, scammers, people with bad intentions. And that's where Aura comes in. Aura scans the internet and these data broker sites to find where your personal information is being exposed. Then they work to have it removed. They continuously monitor these sites and send removal requests on your behalf, so you don't have to spend hours chasing it down yourself. But Aura goes beyond just data removal. They also offer identity theft protection, credit monitoring, fraud alerts, real-time security updates, all in one place, all quietly working in the background. In a time when privacy feels increasingly out of your control, Aura gives you a way to take some of that control back. You can try Aura free for 14 days. You can go to aura.com/softwhiteunderbelly or click the link in the description to start your free trial. Thank you for watching.
In the long run, she was a very bad influence. She was talked about on here before. But we did it, and I just remember looking at her like, this is, I like it. Like the instant feeling of, you know, wanting more, but not understanding that. And then from there, I started drinking, I started smoking, I started doing anything, pills, coke. I never, like, heroin wasn't around when I was doing, like, I guess crack was, but that wasn't one. More of a social user, I guess, just to fit in. And then, that kind of took over my life until I was in 20, 21. Mm. So when I went to prison later.
For drugs?
I guess, like, related, drug-related. It was fraud, but I was obviously under the influence and making bad choices because of drug use.
And trying to make money for drugs.
Mm-hmm. So I was, I always knew that we weren't poor, but we were always struggling. So I guess when a lot of times when I've seen opportunities to make money, I've taken them, and they haven't been the best choices.
Is that what led you to meeting up with Jeffrey Epstein?
Yes. So when I would say when I was about 13, I'm only going to say Jenna's name because, you know, she's who I am public with, but we came from the same circle, the same group of, I guess what you could say, recruiters. What I feel like is that we were infiltrated. That was like a plant put into our neighborhood of, or group, and kind of picked off one by one. So I wasn't the first one who went. And when I think about it, what is so sick is how normal it was, how casual it was. But now I see that everybody was lying. I realized at the time they were lying too. But it definitely that moment. I wasn't a virgin when I went there. And I was what I essentially say groomed. I knew that this girl had went, this girl had went, this girl had went. All these people had went, and they were fine. Nobody was kidnapped. Nobody was, you know, hurt, like tortured and hurt. And they would talk about it kind of casually and joke about it. And and kind of make fun of him in a way. And he was the only one that I met, but guys like that were always around. And when it came, they presented it to me in a way that, hey, you know, we've all gone and he wants to see somebody else now. And we were fine, and you're only going to have to stand there in your underwear and massage him, and that's all he's going to – that's basically it. He might, you know, play with himself while he does it, but that – while you massage him, but that's going to be it. And I agreed. Because, you know, I had experiences like that before. I had one boyfriend, who I had been with for a year, you know, so I had lost my virginity. I had had those experiences of, you know, I guess, a relationship of a man. So I wasn't like, I was like, okay, you know, this is weird, but I'll do it. And so the girl who we describe as, you know, the older girl, she's not really older. She was born the same year I was. And we didn't, that's how, I don't know if maybe we just thought that or we think that, but I've looked her up myself, out of curiosity, and she's not the older girl that we thought. She's the same age as me. But we went there, and they like, you pick out, they dress you, and it was not even just dress you, like picking out clothes to wear, and as a teenagers going through each other's closets, trying on each other's clothes, it was like, no, try this bra on. What color underwear are you wearing? Try this bra on. Or, you know, this bra goes good with this shirt. And, you know, wearing other people's undergarments because you're going to be standing in front of some guy giving him a massage and he's going to give you $200. And you go over there as a group. See, my transaction, I guess, happened really fast because, like I said, I wasn't the first one. So, I was brought there, and the girl brought me right upstairs. I remember what, like, there had to be a cab driver on staff. There had to be, because they were ushering so many of us so many times that there's no way that they didn't have a driver. And it was a cab. It was an actual cab. Like, it wasn't just a driver, like a plain car. Picked us up, took us right over there, immediately brought upstairs. I didn't see anybody. Brought to a bathroom. There was nobody there. Told to get down to my underwear, and that's it. They leave me there. And you know, he walks in and he has a towel on and he lays down and he introduces himself. He's very, I guess today he kind of made me, I think of men in two different ways today. Either do I think you have the creep factor, or do you, I think you possibly have it. Because he was very creepy, but yet charming. Like, I see how people could get, it didn't feel dangerous at that time. It just felt, pressured. And like when you're going there, it's like, well, does he know how old we are? And they're like, yeah, but he doesn't care. Nobody's going to ask. And if they ask, just tell him you're 18. But nobody's going to ask. Nobody did ask, obviously. But he walks in and he lays down and he's like, I like my nipples rubbed. I like them pinched and turned like this. And, you know, he sets a timer. There's a timer. So I'm just clocked in on that. And there was no like back rub part of it. There was no like actual massage part. It was like straight to it. I like my nipples rubbed, chest up, and he was, you know, pleasuring himself. And he like used these different oils, and he like started to grope on me and like fondle me, and was like, you could see it get more and more aggressive as like tension built, I guess.
You're how old here?
14. And I'm just like, what am I supposed to do? I can't. I wanted to obviously run out. I'd be like, never mind. But I knew that there was a limit on this. I wasn't the first one, and that it wasn't going to go any further than that. What we were doing right now. This was it. Hopefully, and he did attempt more things. He tried to take my clothes off. He had his hands in places that they were penetrating, asking me if I liked it, if I had done this before, or what I wanted him to do. I think that he could tell that I was uncomfortable because he couldn't get off. He was unsatisfied. The timer went off and he was like huffing, like just got up abruptly, said, go back downstairs and tell to come back. So I did that and I said, I'm done, you know, and I just let's go. You guys, you know, I wanted to be like, you guys did not tell me any of that was going to happen at all. I didn't even rub this guy's shoulders at all, like not even a touch his back. And she went back up there, and I think she took care of it real quick and then came back and got right back in the car, and there was three of us. So it was got right back in the car, all three of us in the back seat of the cab, and it was like silence.
Did you get the feeling like he's doing multiple girls throughout the day?
Oh, yes, for sure. Yes. The girl that brought us was there. I think it was somewhere in the files that she had brought like over 100 girls she reported at one time. And she's nowhere public. That's not even a girl that speaks out. No one knows her name. And we were being shuffled in and out so fast that there's no record of most of us. And that's why most of us didn't say, hey, you know, that guy is over there being, you know, inappropriate, is because it was more like, who's going to believe you?
How many girls in your little circle had done this? Roughly.
I want to say that it was propositioned to probably about six of us, but maybe four of us did it. that I know of. But the circles, when you look at them, were actually very close to each other. He manipulated the same kind of groups of teenage girls. He found one that would go and seek others and convince them that it was okay. If he liked them, then he would bring them back. So at 14, again, we leave his house, we get in the cab, we go back to the girl's house, and we just down it in alcohol. At that point, we're having a good time. We go to the mall. We continue to get dressed up, and we don't talk about it at all. We go to Clematis Avenue. I don't know if it's Clematis Avenue, but you know, a street of all clubs at 14, and they're just letting a group of four of us stroll right in, dance on bars, and drink. And we're 14, and nobody asks us for ID. Nobody asks us, you know, we're not going to the bar per se ourselves and getting alcohol and ordering from the bartender, but we're definitely getting handed drinks from men, and we're getting chauffeured around because of this one girl who we thought was older, who again is the same age as us. I think it was more of the perception. Like, we felt like she was more experienced. So we think that we felt she was older. Or she could have lied to us back then, because we were all liars to fit in. And everyone always says, where were her parents? Where were their parents? My mom, like I said, married a guy, had all these stepkids who were they were getting involved with gangs. They were you know, stealing, getting in trouble with the law, doing drugs, cops all the time, getting in fights with each other. Like, I was bullied at home. People say, you know, have you ever been in a fight? No, I haven't been. I've been beat up a lot, you know, as a kid. And it was just unruly. So the youngest girl I quickly learned how to manipulate my mom. And we were at a time either that she was just naive, which now looking back, I think that she was. But I am no contact with my mom, so she's probably not going to like what she sees, but she should have kind of paid more attention. But there was no real consequence, and if there was, it was like, oh, you wrote the word fuck on the outdoor generator and your stepbrother told on you? And your mom brought you in the kitchen and said she doesn't even know how to spell that word. And your stepdad sits you down and gives you a pen and says, sit down right here and spell it. Write it out. Because it was like a outdoor, took a big marker, and my stepbrother told me to write it. And then he told on me. So in my head, I said, F-O-C-K. And my mom's like, see? See? And I knew, and he was so mad that he went out and got a 2x4 and drilled holes in it and cut a handle in it and beat both me and my stepbrother with it. So those were the kind of consequences that I got. But you were still allowed to sneak around and go out. So when you're getting beat, you get sneakier. You don't want to get caught, and you don't want to get in trouble. But The 2x4 incident happened once, and my mom was so upset that she took it to her job the next day and threw it away in the dumpster.
Hmm. Yeah. Did you graduate high school?
I did not graduate high school. When I dropped out, so after the whole abuse with Jeffrey Epstein happened, and we that was kind of like the breakup of our friendship group. And I moved again back to West Virginia. We were in West Palm Beach for about probably the longest that I remember at one time, which was like 5 years. Like the longest at one place in one place, but we moved back to West Virginia. And I obviously continued to use drugs and seek out the wrong people. And it was different this time because I knew how to manipulate men to give me what I wanted, which continued. Like I said, there was like a year where I had to recover, which was right when I moved back to West Virginia. But when I was 17, I was skipping school all the time with my friends, using drugs, hanging out with older men. At 17, I actually became a stripper, like with a fake ID, which is crazy. And I remember the principal pulled me into the office and said, you know, I had been in trouble so many times, and he was just like, I think you should drop out. And I said, you know what? I think you're right. And he called my mom up right there and put her on speakerphone. And I said, Mom, I'm dropping out. She said, okay. And that was, I left, and I never went back to school. I went to work.
As a stripper?
No, well, not directly at that time. That was like 3 months before I turned 18. I went retail, fast food, wherever I could work. And then I was obviously still doing drugs, so I would like sell it to. So I was selling drugs, just not anything major, just enough to get me by and to supply myself. And then when I did get my GED in prison. So that was one thing. When I was in West Virginia, I was 17 at this point, and my parents moved again. And I refused. I said, I'm not going. I will be homeless. I don't know where I'm going to live. I don't know how I'm going to live, but I refuse to move again. Because you guys, it was just chaos. And I don't know if you've ever moved as a kid, but you do it one or two times and that's heartbreaking enough. You do it 50 plus times, and it's like, you're gonna have to put me in juvenile detention until I'm 18, because I will fight you. I'm not going. And she was just like, okay. So I asked my best friend, who passed away a couple years ago from cancer, I asked her mom if I could stay with her, and they didn't have any room for me, so I literally slept in my best friend's bed for 3 months, on and off until I was 18. And then when I was 18, the house that my parents owned when they had moved, when I refused, my mom was like, you can go live there. They were still selling it, but she was just like, you can go live there. I didn't have to pay rent, and I had gotten money from the car accident that I was in, and she just, again, gave me that too. No control. I blew that in about 6 months. It was, I think, $100,000. So I partied pretty hard, and then at 18, she was like, you can go live in this house and not pay rent. And then I was obviously full-time at the strip club with a real advantage being in West Virginia and knowing I was making a lot of money at 18, and it destroyed me.
The fast money?
Yeah. The fast money and the men, the older men, which they have always been around. Just not, I think what we're doing now is breaking the silence on like a secret society that's always been there. Because I can't tell you how normal it felt that it literally, it changes how we think. It distorts your reality of what's right and wrong. At a very young age, when you have been exposed to all these things, like I knew what sex was when I was 4. I shouldn't have. There's no way. Like you shouldn't have. So not only a lack of like parental, but also the creepy older men that were always around, that would make comments or even like suggestions to, and I'm talking like to someone who's less than 8. I was never touched by a family member, and I was never like sexually. So I thankfully didn't have that. But that doesn't mean that the creepy uncle didn't say something, or the creepy uncle didn't have a shed out back with porn, you know, Playboy spread eagle posters plastered on the inside, and he left the door wide open as I was outside playing, knowing that I could easily see it. Just the secret society that's there, that is, I don't know. It's a really hard thing to be like, you go through this and I know I'm not the only one that feels like this. Like, you just feel misunderstood. Like, there's nothing, or not misunderstood, but it's hard. It's literally unexplainable. Like, the feeling and what this does to you when you are a young girl or even a boy or whoever, and you have these influences and these situations because just people have the mindset you're gonna see it eventually. I had to really break that, and I still struggle with, I guess I don't struggle as much as I would like to say that I'm accepting. I don't obviously do any kind of sex work or anything myself now, but I don't necessarily knock the employment that people do for that lifestyle. I knew that if I kept doing it, that I would end up either back in prison or dead. So I had to change my life.
That lifestyle and the drugs kind of go hand in hand.
Yes. Sex and drugs and money. So I would say rock and roll, but I didn't really listen to rock and roll. I just wish that, I guess, parents took things more serious.
And where did your life go from there?
When I spent 15 months in prison, and when I got out, my parents were then in Ohio, and I paroled there, and within 6 months I was pregnant. So now I have my own 15-year-old daughter. That is really what changed my life. Not only, it was a combination of, today, it's a combination of no contact. I don't have any contact with my family. I don't have a family besides the one I created myself. Not that it was a big family to begin with, but it was toxic. And changing my environment, going to a state where I essentially knew no one. So I kept myself out of, for the first time in my life, I didn't go seeking out those people, those friends. And of course, they've been around throughout the years. I'm not saying that I've been completely like golden since being released. I've definitely struggled. I was diagnosed with borderline personality last year. And that was after just kind of struggling so long of not knowing what was wrong with me mentally and not feeling okay, but not knowing why, and then not just like not being able to control myself, lashing out, I guess what they call splitting with the borderline.
Right.
I've been on a ton of different medications, a ton of different doctors and therapists, and I would see a therapist for a year and I would quit. I don't like what you, I don't feel like you're helping me anymore. I would change therapists and then I would see them for, you know, a couple months and they would be like, I don't really think there's any more that I can do for you. I'm going to refer you to somebody else.
Is borderline personality disorder difficult to medicate?
There is no medication. You can only treat the symptoms. It's also the only mental illness that is not, you're not born with it. It's kind of given to you through trauma. Like depression, anxiety, those are symptoms of it, or they can be, but it's literally that there's been so much trauma that you are given this illness. And it's comes with like a huge fear of abandonment, impulsivity, anger, I guess, lashing out. And you can treat the symptoms. Like if I have anxiety, you can get anxiety meds. It's very environmental, I guess. And the last couple of years with everything going on, it's, I guess it's just like a whole, why me? Why do I have to be the person? Why am I constantly being, it's thrown in my face every single day. Like I can't even scroll my phone without seeing Jeffrey Epstein's creepy face. It's life consuming. And now like there's this whole group of survivor women that have all different stories. And it's like, I'm so traumatized that I don't know what to believe. I know one person's truth and my own. I don't know anybody else's truth.
You think there are people trying to get in on this?
Yes.
And making up stories?
I mean, I think, yeah, I just with any situation, there's always going to be people that jump on the bandwagon.
Yeah, I saw a video on TikTok yesterday my daughter sent me of some girl claiming that she was molested by Donald Trump as an infant. And
yeah,
it just kind of smacked of something false.
Anywhere where I guess there's an opportunity, I'm not saying, like, I do believe that people are victims and that are speaking out, but I don't necessarily, I guess I just have a real distrust inside of me. And when I do these things, I guess I like make it a point to really say that I'm not doing this to make friends or to make money. I'm doing this because it's the right thing to do. I don't care if any of you guys like me. This whole group of people cannot like me. That doesn't change anything about what happened to me or anyone else.
Is the aftermath of the Epstein thing and all the media publicity of it worse than the actual event?
Yes.
Yeah.
100%. And I don't know if anybody would actually admit to that, because everyone wants to, I guess, really, you know, grab on to, I was traumatized. Yes, it happened to me. But what you guys are doing the last, I would say, in 2019, I was contacted. So Jenna had already started going through the process. She had reached out to me and she said, "Hey, do you remember when we were this age and we did that thing?" Like, it was on, she literally said, like, "that thing" on a Facebook Messenger, and I knew immediately what she was talking about. And she was like, "Do you know that he got in trouble?" And I had no idea. I you know, the first time he got in trouble, I was in prison and a stripper in West Virginia. It wasn't as big of a media thing as it is today. It was big, but it wasn't that big. And I was kind of removed from the environment. And I was like, "What? Yeah, of course I remember that." And she said, "If I can get somebody to believe me, will you speak up?" I guess, per se. And I was like, "Yeah, for sure." And she did. And she got Bradley Edwards, and I was contacted by him in 2019. And it was basically, he contacted me. He said, "You know, my name's Bradley Edwards. I've been in touch with Jenna, and I know what happened to you. Do you want me to represent you?" And I was like, "Yeah. You know, what are our options? What are we doing?" And since then, I had to tell my family, like, I had been married. I've been with my husband since 2013. So we've been together roughly 14 years altogether. Imagine rocking that world. And I've even suggested, like, people don't think about that perspective. They don't think about the spouses. They don't think about the family members of us that are continuously dragged through the media, or, you know, harboring these secrets and doing these secret phone calls with lawyers and not telling our family, because some of the victims don't tell their families.
There are also organizations that are, on the surface, appear to be helping. They claim to be helping the victims, but in reality, there's a very different game going on.
Yes, I would agree with that.
I've had a couple interviewees mysteriously just cancel.
Really?
At the last minute, because of something like that.
Yeah, so I'm going to be truthful and honest about all of this, of what we're going through right now, because you asked me if what we're going through right now is more traumatizing than the actual event. Yes. Did I have a messed up childhood and was I abused and exposed to it? Absolutely. Was I touched and pressured into a situation with someone who was obviously a millionaire, billionaire, famous, whatever. Yes. But what we're doing today is, I think that, we're focusing too much on us at this point. Enough. We need to really be focusing on the people. It feels like a media spectacle. I'm not saying that, I don't know if everyone's doing it for the right reasons. And some of these situations feel really icky.
Yeah.
When you see people perk up when they hear money.
Yeah.
Or they, some of them, they really, I just don't, I don't know if they're doing it for the right reasons, and the individuals and the organizations that are helping, because there's favoritism, there's, I guess, exclusions, there's, they put your trauma on a scale. How abused were you?
Because the money that the victims have received ranges so greatly. It's insane.
Yeah.
And it has a lot to do with maybe who they're trying to protect.
Mm-hmm. And that is another thing. When I was approached by Bradley Edwards, Jeffrey Epstein was still alive.
Bradley Edwards is a lawyer.
Yes. Bradley Edwards is a lawyer. Jeffrey Epstein was still alive. And 2 months later, he died. So I was never actually questioned by anyone. My name was given directly to the FBI. I have now gone on to receive, you know, I guess, let's just say I've been deemed officially a victim. I have received, you know, I'm not the only one either, but I've received compensation without being questioned. So how many other people are like that? And when the government is, you know, one thing, you guys, like the normal people that aren't directly involved in this, the internet's a wild world, and they take, you know, all conspiracy theories come from somewhere. I really believe that. And they don't do any of their own research, and you can say one thing and people believe it, but I don't know that, we're so far off that what I think is going to happen is that Donald Trump is going to come to us, the people that are speaking out right now, and say, you know what, we're going to offer you guys a settlement, and people are going to settle. And then when it can, or people don't settle, or they don't qualify, or whatever the case may be, and it continues to be brought up, because this is not just a societal issue that's going on, that's been going on forever, you know, having interest in young children. It's going to be continuing to be brought up, and then it's going to say, well, we paid them. They should be satisfied. Justice was served. Why do they keep talking?
How do you
talking?
Feel about all the arrests or whatever that have been made here in the U.S.? All zero of them.
Yeah. I feel that's, Like, there's not, they just flat out lie when the government is saying we've done all the investigations we can. We've questioned all of the victims. Nobody has said anybody else was implicated other than Jeffrey Epstein. We know that that's a flat out lie, because I'm telling you today that I have never been questioned. And I've, besides like the estate people and, you know, lawyers and the bank settlements and all that, where's the actual investigation? I was not abused by anybody else besides Jeffrey Epstein. And that's another thing that really, discourages a lot of us from even speaking, because everyone is saying, well, say their names. What names? Not all of us were abused by anyone else, and that's not enough for you. Are you looking for a specific name? Like, the names are there in the records. I can see them. I'm a regular person. You can see them. The government is choosing to put them out, releasing, you know, stuff that shouldn't be released, victims' names, and hiding blatantly in your face, lying and hiding things from you. I don't know how to, it feels like a simulation. I was there at the White House when they were voting, and I was asking questions. I went to the candlelight vigil and was still asking questions. Everything happened so fast. It felt planned. It felt plotted. And I still didn't understand quite what was going on.
It sure feels like the whole thing is just going to blow over and...
I hope, is it? Because I thought it was over 4 years ago.
Well, I mean, in terms of the, or, you know.
And that's another thing, like, we're being dragged through, we go through a lawsuit or something, and it gets settled, and it's like, okay, well, it's over, it's done, to silent, and we're moving on with our lives. You know, I have a career, I've spent over 12 years working in the addiction field. I have a life that I've built, and I'm trying to continue to build that. And every 2 years, you guys keep bringing up something else. I was a firm believer that the files didn't even exist until like 3 years ago, because I'm like, they gotta exist if they won't stop talking about them, because who in their right mind actually documents something like that? But it's there. Or is it? Like, is it real? Because some of the things that we're seeing are really crazy, and we're not doing anything about it. And the one person who was arrested in the other country, Prince Andrew, he wasn't even arrested. He was arrested for giving information to, like, private or trading information, not anything to do with being a pervert. So is it really justice? Because the world keeps saying it is.
It's good to be wealthy, extremely wealthy.
Yeah. And that's genuinely what the world runs on, is wealthy people making, it feels like something that is out of a movie when you really look into it. When I look at the files, like, I know names to look up that shouldn't be there. And they're there. And they're there over and over and over again. Like, I can understand how some of these girls who haven't even told their families feel. Because there are girls out there that have gone through this and never told their spouse or their kids or their parents or anyone, and they are just harboring it, and their names are just out there. Like, how many families have the, it could, it may have ripped families apart, and we don't know it.
It seems like it's super destructive to the victims.
It is.
And not too many others have paid a price.
Right. I look up myself in the files just to see. There's nothing, like I said, we were chauffeured so fast in and out of there. Like, I'm not saying that there's not some camera, because there was cameras obviously all over his property, and there was many of us that went. So I'm not saying that I'm not in there. But the only thing that I saw of myself, again, and this is me who's saying, hey, I am here. This happened to me. No one's questioning me. And I look it up, and I said, okay, I'm going to look. I'm not finding anything about myself. I'm going to look up an organization's name. And I looked up, you know, an organization that helps us survivors, and they ran some kind of check on us who participated in a certain thing, which was way after Jeffrey Epstein passed away, so I don't even know why those things are in there. But they ran a check. Whoever they emailed was redacted. The response that came back, we were coded, but it was redacted, and they were guessing who we were. And I, based on who I knew participated in that day, I was able to pinpoint which one they thought I was, and they were completely wrong. They thought that on official record, came back to say that I was very vaguely probably so-and-so, which is completely false. It was someone else in our little circle, but it wasn't me. And it's like, even then, when you're participating in these things, you can go on camera. Anyone can say that they're abused and they're a victim, and no one's even questioning us. No proper authority is questioning us. They're running checks on us. Even then, no one questions us. I'm just, you know, not saying that I want to be questioned or I have anything else to, like, I can't tell you that Donald Trump abused me. That's not going to come out of my mouth. I was actually on the panel of the six victims on the news where they directly asked us, and we said no, and now he thinks we exonerated him. I've read so many articles that said the victims cleared him. Like, six people cleared him? I'm not saying that he did or didn't do anything, but that why it's a real political mental mind fuck that we're going through. And you guys are there. It's us that are harmed. It's our families. You think my husband, he's the only person that really sees it. And it's a struggle. When the lawyers send you a settlement letter and they say, hey, take care when we give you this information, take care of yourself. They fucking mean that. Like, they mean it. And I'm to the point now where I don't, you know, I'm here, and it's kind of self, I guess, hypocritical for me to say, stop focusing on the victims when I'm sitting here in front of you giving an interview and accepted it and saying, you know, all this stuff. But we're talking about some people who may have wanted to be famous in the first place, and now or giving that to them. Some people who may have, you know, not been abused, who may have been abusers, and now they're easily getting away with it. Some, you know, the monolith that they put us all in, the big thing, like, those were children. Were they? Because how many of us were really children? Because I don't know that it was the majority of what you see today.
The whole thing is just a big circus.
Yeah. And I think we're all just waiting for it to pass, and we don't see any end. Like, it's now, like, for some people, it's becoming like a personality trait. It's like, hi, my name's Wendy. I'm an Epstein survivor. You know, because it's drilled in our heads every single day. We're not, I don't care how strong, confident, pretty, and presented, well presenting some of these people are, we are struggling. And what they're doing is to constantly being put in front of a camera over and over and over again. You have monetary keychains hanging above people's head that's the goal. You have organizations that are picking favorites and saying, you know, excluding some of them. Like, it's really, it's something that I choose to do because I know that it's the right thing to do to bring awareness to it, because people are not seeing that side. They're only seeing, like, the, say their names, where were their parents? You know, it's like, okay, we have said their names. Their names are right in front of your face. Not all of us have, like, a really, it's like a trauma imposter syndrome, you know? It's like, how dare you come up? I've had people message me and say, how dare you? On Instagram. I blew up on Instagram recently. I was like, oh, they like me over here. I'm going to be real mean because the borderline personality, the negative comments online, they don't affect me like they do some people. And I don't troll back and forth because I know of the safety factor. But I was saying about how I was didn't believe everything was fully released. And it was a very subliminal message. And someone commented and said, oh, you're so inspiring with your solo cup and your music. And I said, you know, I ended up going back and forth with the person, and then they came and commented and said, how dare, next time you want to think that you do more for the Epstein victims, how dare you? You should be embarrassed. And I'm like, these are people on the internet that are really going at us and have no clue who they're talking to. And thankfully, like, I've had a lot of support on the internet. Other people will be like, chime in. She's told you, we've told you, and you're still going at her. Like, no one, I can see how no one really speaks up about these things, because I don't know, just from my little bit of speaking publicly, how many people have messaged me and said, hey, this kind of thing has happened to me too. Thank you for speaking up. What you're doing is brave. It doesn't feel like bravery. It feels kind of like insanity. It doesn't feel like I'm doing anything that's brave. It feels traumatizing and really just sickening how it reinforces the normalcy of all the messages that you get that are like, hey, me too, or, you know, a lot of the people who were abused by family members. those are the people that I want to connect with. I don't care about the cameras. I don't care about, and I've left, like, I've turned down a lot of interviews because I know I don't want to get up at 6 a.m. and be on CNN to say, release the files. How many times are we going to do this with the same small group of people? No one else is speaking out because they probably see, like, I'm hoping that some of the girls who haven't spoke out will see us and say, and that was the reason why I did it, but last year is because I was sick of seeing Jenna go through it alone. So I said, you know what? I'm my daughter is 15. I'm going to have this conversation with my daughter. And I'm going to make sure she's okay with me speaking out because now I have got my daughter who says people at her school know who I am, who watch me on the TV and they associate me with Epstein. Like so-and-so's mom was abused by Jeffrey Epstein. Like why is that? I don't want to be known for that. And it's really, I guess I can't knock anyone else's hustle who is profiting. I don't know.
Yeah, it's been a rough ride.
Yeah. I actually think that we've made more progress in the last year, but we've actually done the most damage also because now there's going to come a time, like I'm sitting here and I'm saying this stuff and I'm not even saying it all because of the situation that we're in right now. We still have progress to do, but not just myself, but all of us will have our time in the future, and how we're being treated today will definitely come out. And if you're treating us a certain way, you know, there's going to come a tell-all eventually, and there's going to be specifics. And if you want to be on that side of history, we're already on the wrong side, and now we're being taken advantage of, and it would be different if we were being, like, protected, I guess, but there's no protection. We have to protect ourselves, you know? There's no, and I'm saying this because I read comments online. They're like, oh, they're put them all together somewhere and get them, you know, they think we have security and stuff like that, that we don't. They're literally just parading us around and letting us go off to the wild. You know, I mean, at these events, we do at times have security, yes, but it's dangerous. There's people out here, you know, attempting to assassinate people for less. So how many, and then the suicide rate among this, I guess, situation, there's going to be more of those too, because it's not, I can see it. Like, I see how, I see both sides of the conspiracy of the suicides, right? I see the, was it actually suicide side? And then I also see the I could see why side. And I don't see that being over. And I'm saying that as someone who has struggled with those thoughts myself. As an adult, never as a child. As an adult going through this, never before. Because it's like, obviously I do have a therapist, and I'm not in any danger. I do have a team of professionals, but not everybody is as lucky to have that. And I can really see how it could be I'm so sick of hearing this and doing this and going through this that I just want it to be over. Or on the other side of, I did these horrible, nasty things and now I'm about to be caught and I just want it to be over. So I wish that they would investigate the people that we can, because there's, I don't know, like, people always say, what does justice look like for you? And it's like, I guess for me specifically, it would be to feel justified in the fact that we have all the information that we possibly can is released, and investigations have actually happened, and people are being held accountable. Because you can't tell me that he and Ghislaine Maxwell are the only guilty people. There's no way. How, I mean, it's how could anybody believe that?
All right, Wendy, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you.
Wish you lots of luck in the future. And I hope this eventually comes to a place where you can have some peace.
Me too. Thanks for inviting me, inviting us and including us.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thanks. When the recent media release said that Pam Bondi said that everything was released and nothing else would be further investigated, I wrote a letter to over 200 and it was like 256 Congress members, individual letters. I typed it out, stamped each one, and I want to read that. It was ignored. It was never acknowledged. I did post about it online, and I think people, it kind of puts into perspective, and I'm going to read it here because it was ignored. And I don't know. So, dear members of the Democratic House, my name is Wendy Passante. Thank you to those who met me at the recent press conferences and showed your respect to myself and to the other victims. I'm writing to you because despite going public, despite telling the world my name, and despite standing in front of cameras, many victims still feel unheard, and in some cases, not fully believed and re-victimized, or perhaps worse, believed only when it is convenient for views or media ratings or policy changes. There is so much I have held back from saying, but now I feel a deep pull to share a few of them with you, to let you see what this experience truly feels like from the inside. Many of us stay silent about these things because we're afraid of being attacked or shut out by the very people who understand the most. The risk of being pushed out even further, and that hurts because all we want is to help fix what's broken, not to chase attention or the spotlight. One of the most unsettling aspects of going public about such a deeply personal experience is witnessing how some individuals and organizations seem to revel in the attention these stories bring. It feels profoundly disconcerting to observe people who appear to be enjoying the public relations spectacle surrounding our story, as if being abused is just another opportunity for them to shine in the spotlight. It's distressing to see media outlets and public figures boasting ratings or promoting their brand, because behind every headline and interview is a real person grappling with the aftermath of abuse. In 2019, I was approached by Bradley Edwards. I'm going to skip that. During the process, I was asked several times whether I have ever been contacted by the FBI. My answer has always been the same: no. I have since been officially recognized as a victim by his estate and have received financial settlements as a victim, and yet I have never been contacted by the FBI or any proper investigative authority, not once. And at 14 years old, at the time of my abuse, that factor matters. That fact alone should have warranted exhaustive investigative outreach. Instead, I was financially recognized through an estate process without ever being interviewed by federal law enforcement. So I find it very difficult to believe that there was thorough investigation into what happened to many of us. I have no other abuser besides Jeffrey, but that is not the point. The point is no one ever cared enough to ask. In the publicly released files, my recruiter, whose name is viewable when it shouldn't be, was interviewed in the 2000s. She reported, admittedly, that she brought maybe 30 girls there. During that same interview, she initially denied remembering any of our names or ages. Only after being confronted was she... Only after being confronted was she said to have admitted remembering one of them. Why was this allowed? If someone acknowledged recruiting approximately 30 girls, why was there not an aggressive and comprehensive follow-up? Were they ever asked what happened to them? Now, again, I am sure that the lawyers have asked and documented as much as they can. Without documented investigative diligence by the authorities, serious questions arise. Were all victims independently investigated and confirmed through legitimate processes, or were some of us, like myself, deemed victims only after his death by his estate, without law enforcement doing their job or asking any hard questions? And if the investigation was incomplete, another uncomfortable question follows. Are some of us standing publicly among individuals who may have participated in trafficking girls themselves? Are some victims standing beside people who are guilty and given the opportunity would have trafficked us when we were 14? These are not questions meant to create division. They are questions about accountability. There's also an unsettling dynamic between the organizations that continue to help us. Some of us are excluded and never asked our opinions, and some of us are given a pedestal and constantly paraded around, given every opportunity to speak. I share this as an honest account with someone who's living it. I want to take the time to really say that it's time to stop spotlighting the victims and start doing something about the individuals that we can see in the files that have already surfaced. And it says, with sincerity, Wendy. That's it.